Welcome to the Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast, conversations with leaders who made difficult decisions and built lasting legacies. I am Rick Williams. I speak and write about how leaders can be more successful. My best-selling book, Create the Future, is your essential guidebook for making difficult decisions. This podcast is an opportunity for me and for you to hear how leaders with a wide variety of backgrounds have managed the challenges they faced, made difficult decisions, and had courage when going forward is tough. You will learn important lessons from other leaders. You will find that engaging with our 30-minute conversation will be a great investment of your valuable time. So let's get started. Welcome to the Create the Future podcast. I'm Rick Williams. The Create the Future podcast is a forum for leaders to share their stories about making difficult decisions for their company or for any organization, and in some cases for themselves. My goal with the Create the Future podcast is to provide a forum for leaders to share their stories about leadership, making tough calls, so that you will be a more successful leader of your organization. We are very fortunate to have a great guest today with a compelling story to share. You'll hear about lessons learned, what worked, didn't work, the dilemmas that he faced, and I know it will be valuable to you in learning to be a more skillful leader in your role. So I want to introduce you to Bobby Humes. Now, Bobby is the CEO and lead consultant for his HS consultancy. So Bobby, welcome to the Create the Future podcast. Take a minute and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your journey up to this point.
Yeah. Hi, Rick. Thank you for having me. Bobby Humes, and originally from Long Beach, California, did 10 years in the Army, and they plopped me here in this beautiful place called Washington State. And I've been here on and off since 2003. And in that time, I've sort of made a name for myself in the public sector, working in the state, school districts, in the city. A few years back, I thought to myself, what would it be like?
Yeah, Bobby, look, I'm going to introduce you for 1 second here. I'm just thinking about this. Why did you move to rainy Seattle from California? We want to learn about you here. I'm thinking of, you know, on the beach, all those muscle, you know, exercising. So many times I've walked along the beach there. Why did you make that move?
Well, listen, you know, Rick,
we're forming an opinion about your good judgment right here.
I love it. Well, come on in. You know, I love the place that I grew up in. And as I've matured, what I really wanted was the greenery. Like from my front window, I can see the Puget Sound. I can see the Cascades. Yep. The rain here is a melody. I love a good candle and I love jazz. And so like all of those things kind of get nestled right here in Washington State. And you know what? I've been all over the world, Rick. Some of the best summers in the world are right here in the Seattle region. So if you haven't been out, for all your viewers and listeners, if you haven't been out to Seattle, you deserve to come on out and check us out. It's a great place to live.
Right. Well, I'm sorry for interrupting you on this.
No, but, please.
You know, might as well pick up and learn about you quickly right here. But anyway,
it's great.
So go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
It's okay. So after working in the city of Seattle, I had a big job there, director of HR. It's equivalent to the chief human resources officer for the city. Huge job. I thought that it would be smart for me, after some of the things that we'll dive into in this discussion, to try my hand at running my own business. And that's what I do now. I help leaders, teams, and organizations identify their challenges and use a myriad of tools and methods to help them become who they say they want to be through their vision, mission, values, and all those things that get in between.
Well, I think that's great. I also just want to set a little context for this. So ordinarily, you know, you think about, leaders making big decisions for their company, and you think about bigger organizations. And my book, Create the Future, is I don't mean it's exclusively, but it's written for leaders of organizations, where I say, you know, involve your leadership team and don't be closed to other ideas, that sort of thing. But the principles are absolutely true for people like yourself who are, maybe largely individual entrepreneurs or very small, leader groups of people who are in the entrepreneurial activity. And that's why it's so important to hear your story about a difficult decision that you had to make personally for what you were going to do, you were due for yourself and also for the company you wanted to start. So tell us about that and what was the difficult challenge that you were facing?
One of the things I love about my profession, which is predominantly human resources, is that you get to serve systems, right? You get to help other leaders identify those tough challenges that end up into being the kind of stories that you're talking about. You get to create things. It's a really rewarding career choice. At the same time, you're often walking a tightrope. In my last role as chief HR officer of the city of Seattle, that's exactly what it was for me, walking a tightrope. Now, if we get back in our way back machines, right around 2018, we didn't know of this thing called COVID yet. And so there I was, doing my best to shift an HR enterprise to a modern city workforce that really needed expertise and creativity and collaboration across 400 HR practitioners in the city government. Well, as I was doing that, I was making waves. Leadership's hard, and you got to make hard choices, and you make changes, and everyone doesn't appreciate those changes. And so what happened for me, Rick, was that not one, not two, but four anonymous letters arrived on the mayor's desk about me. And what those letters said about me sent my world, turned it upside down. So when I got those letters, I went to my boss, who was a deputy mayor, and I said, "I can't believe this letter is here." And the letter said things like, "This person is incompetent. He's too young. I'm not that young, Rick. I just look this way. This person doesn't have the chops to really own this role." And I've had people not appreciate my leadership. I mean, that's what leadership is, right? Everybody's not going to be your friend. It's not a popularity contest. It's an effectiveness measure. But I've never had anyone like just come at me like that. And it really created a lot of depression and doubt. And I've always carried a little bit of imposter syndrome, but this really took it to another level. My health spiraled out of control. I had to start seeing a therapist. And what I knew was that in order for me to get over this hump, what I really needed was a coach. I knew enough about coaching because of my role as a human resources director to ask my boss for a coach. Someone to walk alongside me to kind of help me make sense of what I was experiencing. And I got the best coach in the world, Sandy Smith, who's helped several CEOs from big business here in Washington all the way down to the Silicon Valley. And I don't know how we were able to afford her, but she became my coach. And she really helped me transform my thinking around my challenge. And so, as she helped me kind of come out of that hole, I started thinking to myself, "Man, I want to do this for other people." And that helped me start thinking about what it was going to take for me and my big decision to leave what was comfortable for me, almost 20 years experience in human resources, and start a business helping others navigate their challenges, just like Sandy was able to help me.
Did you, now I Are you married? And I asked that in the context of who was close to you that helped you go through this process.
Yeah, I am married. I'm married to my best friend. She's a phenomenal photographer here in this region, Marissa Humes. And while she is a great best friend and a great supporter, at that time we had our fifth son. Her grandma, who raised her, sort of her mother, had a stroke. And so she was living with us. We had a new baby, had this big
Oh my
job. And,
gosh.
I really didn't want to put that weight on her. So that was more of me bottling it up and keeping it in, which a lot of leaders do, right? Heavy is the head, as they say. And I really, carried that baggage around with me kind of on my own for a long time until I engineered my kitchen cabinet, as I call it, those folks that I could talk straight talk to and who would give straight talk back to me to help me navigate my challenge.
Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit. I was trying to understand who might be your kitchen cabinet. So,
Yeah. So for me, my kitchen cabinet was a series of folks. One was my therapist. It was really hard to find a therapist that I could connect to. And I was able to find a phenomenal therapist who's now a professor. He's not practicing anymore, and it's a shame. Sandy was another one of those folks in my kitchen cabinet. And Christopher Williams, who was the former superintendent of Seattle Parks and Recreation, a great mentor, and he has a fantastic fishing boat. And he'd call me up early and we'd go out fishing, and it was just a place for us just to connect and rest and talk about things. You know, I wouldn't have been in that role if it wasn't for Christopher, because I think he kind of nudged the mayor to give me a shot at the role. And so a good friend of mine, Amy Lineker, who just published a book, Cheers to Monday, she was a fantastic person that I could just nudge a little bit and kind of check in. And so having that array of people to kind of really see me and not let me rest in the challenge was very helpful. And they gave me tools and ways of looking at my problem and kept me accountable to what I said I wanted to achieve during that season.
I got to tell you, I think this is great. So many people in your situation sort of close in on themselves and go into a shell. You're taking an enormous risk. I mean, you took an enormous risk saying, you know, I might not understand really what is going on here and what I should be doing for myself and how I should think about my options. You took an enormous risk in going out to other people who I asked about your wife because you are central in her life, but these other people are not necessarily central in your life, and they're, you know, you're asking them, hey, I here's what I'm trying to do. Can I talk to you about it and share with you what I'm the issues for me and hear your own experience in dealing with these? That is what you're doing, and that is courageous on your part,
Thank you.
and something that most people in your position aren't willing to do. They're afraid to do it. I mean, I want to stop talking and let you start talking, but they're dealing with shame and fear and uncertainty, and I should be withdrawing. So I don't know, in a way, kind of tell us about who you were that you were open to doing this.
Fundamentally, I am a fourth generation military veteran. We now have five. My 20-year-old is in the Army now. And, one of the things that we talk about a lot in our home is the idea of fear. And really looking at fear as an idea, as this emotion that all along with all the other emotions, from sadness to happiness. I've done enough work and I've been in enough situations where I've experienced what fear felt like to really say, ah, I know what this is. And usually I have this device or this, process to getting over it. But a long walk wouldn't shake this. A weekend on a cabin on the ocean wouldn't shake this. And that made me say, okay, I need some other people to kind of walk this with me. I think that we have these indicators in life that those are pivotal option points, right? When I met my wife, the emotional indicator was, bliss. Like, wow, there's something special about her. I should do something, right? So I don't lose this moment. I think that the same is true when we're building something, where we're trying to navigate a change, and I think it's not only important to look at our data, like that is very, very important. But I think there's some data that is inside of us that we can take and pause and say, okay, what's happening for me there? And if it's fear, man, I love to look at my fear and say, okay, like, do the root cause exercise on my fear. Like, why do I feel this way? What's it going to take for me to be different? And my analysis of that process at that time was, I know enough about coaching that I need a coach. I know enough about my mental well-being that I'm not healthy. I need this person. I need friends. I need people who are not going to judge me, right? And who know me beyond my moment of fear to kind of walk with me. And I think that if more leaders did that, we would have a consistency in the practice of leadership, that would make it okay for others to do the same.
Yeah, now you're talking about a really important change for yourself and even who you are as a professional, maybe even as a person. Where do you think you found the courage to do that? Where did that come from? How did
You
you
know,
get to the point of being able to say, okay, I am going to change some important elements of who I am professionally, maybe who you are personally?
yeah, my faith is a big reason for that. It rules my life, and what I've learned through my faith is that I'm never going to be perfect, but I do have the opportunity every day for progress. And so, I love asking questions, Rick. Like I can imagine that you do too. And I think the best questions we ask ourselves, or excuse me, the best questions that we ask are the questions we ask ourselves. And so I've always had this innate ability to be self-aware. I'm a tall guy. You can't tell that from the video. I have a loud voice. I'm very confident. And when I walk into a space, the first question I ask myself is, how much space do I need to take up here? Right? So that others can really get what they need. And so I think it's just being, just having a practice of being self-aware that's come from my military training, from my faith, from my family upbringing, and from leaders who I see out there that are just really great people, who, this word that I used to have words of the year. And one of the words I had a couple of years ago was, help me out here, Rick. Magnanimity, being magnanimous, right? There you go. Because having grace in roles like ours, power walks before you, it walks with you, and it stays after you're gone. And so knowing that when you're in a space and you have power, you don't need to have all the right question. You don't have to have the right answers all the time. Your job is to really facilitate that. And so I've always been interested in how do I become the best leader I can be? Again, not perfection, just progress.
Well, let's go back to, so you were in this HR leadership role. Four people had sent in letters saying this guy doesn't have any idea what he's doing. And I mean, I have no idea what they were talking about, but did you then say, gee, some things I'm doing as part of being in this position have to change. Did you say maybe I'm not a right fit for this job? I should leave. I mean, what happened as a result of all this? Fill us a little bit about so we're understanding the consequences of all this.
Yeah, well, my first reaction, I'll back up a little bit more and say, I think it was one person who was tenacious in each of those letters, but my first reaction was anger, and disappointment. Like, how could they? Like, don't they know? Like, and really, anger, frustration mixed with pride, and then again, that imposter syndrome just kind of was like, I told you, right? Just kind of blew open the doors. And then I had to go back to my why. Like, what was I trying to accomplish? And at the end of the day, what I was trying to accomplish with all the changes I was making was what the mayor and I agreed on: a modernized HR workforce that was going to be able to support city employment in the way that we saw it. And that meant that we couldn't do business as usual. That meant that our structures had to change. And that meant that I had to insert myself in business that person in my role previously didn't insert themselves in. And that meant, every, from the large thing to what type of human resource information system are we going to use to, how are meetings run? Like, I'm not coming to a meeting that doesn't have an agenda because my time's important and your time's important. So we're going to have a new process. Like, so those kinds of things, I think, grated against some people. And so as I was reading those letters and feeling all my feels and, holding court with my kitchen cabinet, I had to fight against myself and those emotions in order to maintain what I knew to be the right course of action for the organization and for my team. I had an E team at that time. It was about 12 of us, really large executive management team. Half of those folks I brought in, and half I inherited. And you can just imagine some of how that, how that felt. But what I wanted to do was at that E team, create some ownership, some shared ownership, some shared vision. And it took us about 18 months, and right on time because of COVID, we really coalesced as as an executive management team that was that shared the same goal. And so that was because of Sandy. That was because of my therapist. That was because of the other folks around me and my E team. I still have relationship with most of them. They're fantastic people. And we did a lot to put ourselves in position at that time to get ready for what we didn't even know was possible, and what ended up being COVID-19.
So part of what was going on is that you were expected, brought into this role, and expected to make significant changes to the organization and the way the organization operated. And so an element of this was resistance to change on the part of the organization. Is that, if I'm hearing that correctly, is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And which we should expect as leaders, right? You're going to have that level of resistance, but the covert resistance I wasn't ready for.
Yeah. And okay, so there's an element of it just happens every single time a new person comes in and says, I am executing on the mayor's desire to improve the efficiency and operations of this department. Here's what we're going to do. And there's going to be resistance to that.
Totally.
On the other hand, there was another, if I'm hearing you correctly, there's another element of people saying, this guy doesn't know how to do his job. He shouldn't be in this job, blah, blah, blah. I mean, what did you learn about yourself from that as a leader and a communicator and a planner and whatever? What did you learn about
Yeah.
yourself?
Great question. I learned that I have a tendency to go. Like I have a tendency to want to just get to fifth gear as fast as possible and maintain that fifth gear. And often what that does, or where that comes from, is the inability at sometimes to really catch the pace in the moment of where the team is. And I can think that, the ideas that I put forth, the plan that I put forth is sound. So let's go, let's get on it. And that's not how people work. What I've learned since then is to ask more questions, right? Even when I'm supporting now in my coaching business, when I'm helping leaders who are brand new, I love working with emerging leaders who are, just taking their first executive role, to just taking their first CEO or ED role. And our 90-day plans usually have 30 days of just asking questions. How many questions can we ask in order to get a really good glimpse of what's happening, who the players are, what's most important to the people? Because there's a meta conversation happening when we're doing change management, as you know. There's the thing that we're saying we want to get done, and there's a thing people believe is most important, regardless of what we're saying. And so I want to help my team and other teams understand, what is that conversation? What are we actually negotiating? And so that we can get clear with, sometimes letting some things go, holding some things lightly, and taking some things up so we can keep moving forward. And so I've learned that my change management, I need to go slower to go faster. And if I'm out on a walk and there's nobody with me, I'm not leading anything. I'm just out on a walk, right?
Boy, I gotta tell you, what you are saying is so important. I I'm not talking about it here, but when I talk about the principles for making important decisions in my book, Create the Future, what you're saying is absolutely central to that, that you have to A, open yourself to hearing other points of view, but you also have to bring your leadership team along with you, help them be part of the process of creating the vision that you then in the end are the one who is the must articulate the vision in a way that's meaningful to your team, your employees, your customers, your investors. And the way to do that is exactly what you just said. Slow down, bring them into the process of defining the future that you want for the organization. I mean, I think it's extremely valuable for people to hear someone in your position who's done it and articulating the value of that for you and for the organization. It wasn't just for you, but all that you were trying to accomplish through the HR department is going to be more successful by slowing down, taking the time to go faster. I think I'm quoting what you said, but that is exactly the approach that in the long term will be successful.
I totally agree. I think often leaders want to go fast. I wanted to go fast. I'll talk about me. I wanted to go fast because I thought I need to make a mark. I need to make a demonstrable shift so that people know I'm serious about the thing. But what I've learned in the mantra that I use all the time now is that self-preservation isn't the primary value. So if I ever put myself in front of the thing, we've lost. And so to your point, slowing down so that we can speed up, that's what we want. And it's like eating a great steak, right? You don't just take that thing in one bite. You want to enjoy it, right? And I think leadership done well is just an immense gift.
So, okay, I've been distracting you because you have such an interesting story to tell. You haven't even left your office. You're still sitting as the HR director for the city. I mean, what happened then? You
Well,
had to make a decision. Am I going to stay here and keep doing this and be better at doing it, or am I going to do
that's
something
right.
else or whatever? I mean, tell us that what happened then.
That's right. My work with Sandy Smith was just so transformative for me. So I asked her in one session, I was like, how did you learn to do this? And she said, well, was a part of a coaching school and now I teach at that school and it's the Hudson Institute of Coaching. And I said, I want to go to that school. She said, well, it's tough. It's rigorous. It's 8 months. And it's like, I said, well, I did grad school in 1 year. I can get this done. She's like, this is a lot. And this is different than anything you've ever done. I said, well, sign me up. Like you're not pushing me away, Sandy. You're selling me. So let's get this done. So I did the 8 months. And during the 8 months, you have to, in order to graduate, you have to get so many hours of coaching time. Well, along the course of doing the job and having the baby and having all the family dynamics that we had at that time and COVID, I was able to get it done. And not only that, and
It's
doing
hard to believe.
the right, it was amazing. Doing the sessions with the clients that I gave a lot of free hours to finish this certification, I just fell in love with it, Rick. I just fell in love with the idea that the questions I ask someone can help them unlock opportunities and options for them that they can make decisions and test out in their world and bring back to our sessions and let us scrutinize the data that they were learning about their challenge or their opportunity. And hearing people just talk about what I feel is still, 5 years later, what I feel is sometimes minor interventions that help people make, huge shifts in their practice, in their careers. It was just such a fulfilling gift. And it really took me back to when I got out of the Army and I started my career in HR. When I found HR, I was like, you mean I can go out and tell people about jobs and they can get those jobs and I get paid to do that? Like, I want to do that, right? And so I it was that same rewarding element. And I thought to myself, well, I don't want to do anything else for the rest of my life. I want to walk with leaders. I want to walk with teams. I want to help folks do what Sandy did for me, until I'm called home. And so that's what I thought I was going to be doing. And fast forward, what I learned is that coaching is often a bridge into the other systems of an organization. That leader, that team, they are dealing with the widgets and processes and challenges of an organization. And my organizational design expertise and my HR expertise was still very valuable for my clients. And so I went from a coaching business to now a consulting business where we focus on executive coaching for leaders and teams. We create curriculum around organizational communication, things like that, change management. And I'm a keynote speaker. So that's kind of what we shifted into, just saying yes to what was in me, what created a new passion in me through coaching. And it's been fantastic.
Well, that's great. So you made a decision, since we're talking about decision making, you made a decision to leave your role as HR director for the city and launch this new consultancy. Was that moment of saying, okay, I am resigning and I'm now going to step into this new path in life where you might fail at it. I mean, how did you make that decision, that final decision?
Well, in the Hudson training, while I was getting my hours, I started testing out, okay, hey Rick, you've said yes to my coaching, how does $75 a session sound? Rick goes, yeah, that sounds great. I'm going, he didn't negotiate, so maybe I can charge more, right? So I just started to see my path to yes, more and more, and it let me know that I was blessed to be able to do two things well, business development and also coaching and consulting. And so, we don't pay a lot in my organization for advertisement. Most of what we get is word of mouth, and it's compelling work. I've had clients that have been with me 4 years, and it started with a coaching relationship, and now it's morphed into all kinds of things, from strategic planning to curriculum development. So that work has really, all those yeses have really helped me say, okay, what do I like doing? And how do I formulate my offerings in a way that are really effective and impactful for my clients. We start with everything has the same front door. So we start with what we call a discovery call. And in that call, I just ask questions. To really understand what people need in the moment. And then I write them a proposal and they typically say yes. And then we do the work. And so it's really been this really cool opportunity to,
It's
no, it's not that easy.
that easy? No, I know it's not.
But it's been rewarding and just being able to build these really great partnerships. And yeah, I'm just blessed.
Well, I got to tell you, this is great. And I'm teasing you about saying it's easy in the way you're talking about it, because I know none of this is easy. And did your boss, the mayor or vice mayor, try to talk you out of leaving your position? Or at that
No,
point,
the
you had already said, hey, this is where I'm going to go, and what? I mean, anything you want to add about that process?
Yeah, no, we were in the throes of COVID. The nation kind of got his arms around the virus, and vaccinations we're going for. So, the kind of pace of change. Like I was writing a new policy every 24 hours when we were just learning about, social distancing, things like that. And so, there was some unrest in Seattle at that time. So there was a lot of dynamic shifts happening, but it all kind of seemed to kind of fizzle out about mid-year 21. And
Oh my
Mayor
gosh.
Durkan, Mayor Durkan had shared that she wasn't going to run for re-election, and that meant that I knew who my potential bosses were going to be. And I thought, if not now, when? And it just seemed like the right time.
Okay.
So it just seemed like the right time, and yeah, it just all kind of worked out.
And so we got to wrap it up here for time wise, but any do you want to share any sort of key takeaways about for someone going through a similar situation for yourself? I want to give you an opportunity to do that about how you manage yourself as you go through this, because I think you're so insightful about this that I don't want to sign off without giving you an opportunity to share that with the listeners.
Well, thank you, Rick, and thank you for a great start to my day in this conversation. I would start with this whole idea of imposter syndrome. I think what created the animus for me to kind of have my challenge was I was already coming to work every day doubting myself. And there's nothing wrong with that, but unchecked, that imposter syndrome can really hobble us. So if you're experiencing that, start doing some work there. Maybe that is some coaching. Maybe that is, talking to a therapist. Whatever that is for you, start looking at that. And then I would say the next piece is action. Let's not just look at it and understand it. That's great. Now, what action steps do we want to take so that we can make a shift? And then surround yourself with people that love you. That and love doesn't look like capitulation. Love looks like challenges and reminders and supports that you may not want. You may not want to journal, but if three people are telling you to journal, as my grandmama used to say, everybody's not lying on you. But so everybody's not saying it just because. Maybe you take some opportunity and you do that because it might help you. And so I think being active about what's happening with us allows us to be active about what's happening in our organizations. The only reason why we were able to be successful when COVID hit us was because, and not just me, but several of us were doing work necessary within ourselves so that we could arrive to work ready to carry what was necessary for the organization. And that's what I do now today. I make sure that I'm ready. I have an ethical standard in my firm that if you're not okay, take the day off. So that because we, and I have what I call affiliates, people who come alongside me and work in their expertise. And so when we're well, our clients soar. When we're not, our clients don't. So it's very important that we're taking care of ourselves so that we can support those who are doing phenomenal work out there in the world. Thank you, Rick.
Boy, you are so right and so on target. So, Bobby, this has been an unbelievably fantastic and valuable conversation. I want to thank you for sharing this. I know people who've listened to this. I hope they'll kind of walk away and think about what they're really hearing from you because it's extremely valuable for everybody in positions of leadership. How can someone who's listening, they wanted to get in touch with you or learn more about you, how can they do that?
Yeah, go to our website. It gives you a lot of great information about what we do and how to connect with us. That website is www.BH, that's like Bobby Humes, consultants with an S, dot C-O. No dot com, it'll go to somewhere weird. www.bhconsultants.co. I'd love to hear from you.
That's great. I hope they do. I also want to thank our audience for taking the time to engage with a guest and learn from the guest. If you haven't done so, please follow the Create the Future podcast on your favorite podcast channel. And also want to say that if you have a compelling story to share about important and difficult decisions you had to make, consider coming on the podcast as a guest. If you want to do that and learn more about how to do that, go to rickwilliamsleadership.com and then go to the Create the Future podcast page on my website. So again, that's rickwilliamsleadership.com. So remember that you create the future by the decisions you make today. When you have to make an important decision and you have to get it right, slow down. Take the time to get it right just as Bobby has outlined it for you today. Until next time, be well. What an interesting and inspiring conversation. I hope you found it as valuable as I did. Thank you for listening. Let me know if you have a compelling story to tell about making tough choices for your organization or for yourself. Coming on my podcast is a way to share what you have learned with a wider audience. If someone you know would be a great guest, please make an introduction. I welcome leaders with a story to tell and important learning to share. You can contact me about the podcast at podcast.rickwilliamsleadership.com. That's podcast.rickwilliamsleadership.com. Please share the link to my podcast with your colleagues. They will thank you for getting them access to these valuable conversations. And finally, please give us a great rating on and subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music. Just search for Create the Future with Rick Williams. Thank you for listening to Create the Future with Rick Williams podcast, conversation with leaders who make difficult decisions and build lasting legacies.